And welcome back. It's time now for our second Radio Roundup interview this morning, and joined now by Representative Frances Gibson, also a co-chair appointed by Senator Speaker Wilson, rather, now from the House of Representatives, also sitting on this task force discussing changes to the tax code here in Utah. We heard earlier from Senator Lyle Hilliard, and now Frances Gibson, Representative, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Well, I won't do my best Robin Williams impression of good morning, Vietnam, but how about if we say good morning, Richfield, and good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Richfield. I'm great. And it's a tempting thing whenever someone comes on. They're always tempted to do a Robin Williams impression, I'm sure. But no one can top him. So, well, thanks so much for joining me and talking about this. And we heard from Senator Hilliard a little bit about how it's gone in the last few sessions that you've had already, and of course tonight in Richfield. And I want to get your thoughts. He mentioned also some of the problems he sees in the way that the tax code is written, and what could happen in the next few years with that. What are your thoughts on the problems Utah has right now with our taxes that need to be adjusted?
I think, you know, as we look at what's going on now, Utah's an awesome place. We have lots of companies moving in, lots of jobs coming in, lots of things going on, but there's some struggles in rural Utah, and that we're losing, and rural Utah loses a lot of its talent, a lot of its good young men and women. They're having to go away potentially for education reasons, and then they go away with jobs, and the rural Utah seems sometimes, in many ways, to not reap the benefit that maybe the rest of the state is receiving from having good tax policy and things of that nature. But if you had a household budget, I use this analogy. You may have a mortgage for your home, or a rent. If you're renting, it's your rental budget. You have a utility budget. You have a food budget. Maybe a transportation or a car budget. And then if you're lucky, you have a vacation budget. Maybe we want to go see the beach or something, and we're saving up because we want to go to California or Disneyland. You have flexibility to move. So a hot July comes, and it's a really hot month, and all of a sudden my energy bill, my power bill, is $80 more than what was expected this month. Well, I have the ability or the flexibility to look at my other budget items, my other budget that I have, and those are the categories, and move that money into my utility budget for that month to meet my utility bill. In the state of Utah, we do not have that same flexibility. We have income tax, which is dedicated strictly towards education. We have a gas tax, which is strictly towards transportation. And then there are property taxes, which are mostly local, county and schools. And then we have a sales tax. And the sales tax has to cover everything that those other areas, which are strictly designated to one or two things, would cover. And it's the sales tax that's shrinking. And so we do not have a money problem. Us looking at this isn't a way for us to go out and find more money and more revenue for the state. We have plenty of that. What we have is an inflexibility and an allocation problem. And so what we're really trying to do is examine how do we get more flexibility within our budget to be able to move things around. How do we potentially lower the tax rate while spreading out the amount of taxes that we get? A good conservative principle would say, broaden the base, lower the rate. Well, if I'm a non-tax guy, just an everyday citizen, what does that mean, lower the, broaden the base and lower the rate? What it means is, how many people can we collect taxes from collectively on a larger scale, but yet lower the rate that everyone pays? And so, in a sense, when you add it all up, I'm paying less. We're just collecting it from more people. And so, do I want to tax three people at 40%, or do I want to tax 10 people at 10%? And so, those are just fictitious numbers, but the point is how, as this task force moves along, we want to be able to identify areas in which we can lower the tax rate. This isn't an exercise to collect more money, but also give us more flexibility within our budget when we're short in certain areas, or when other areas seem to be growing faster than originally intended for or budgeted for. We can allocate resources in that manner.
And so that's something that obviously could solve some problems in the future as well. But a question on that: with if you're lowering that rate, everyone who has an income is paying that, right? Not everyone is using an Uber or is using some of these services that would be taxed. So maybe explain that to us as well, as how lowering that base and lowering the rate and broadening the base, because not all of us are going to be under that base still, even and as you lower it to some of those taxes that seem to be everyone's paying right now.
Yeah, if we lower some of those rates and you don't use those services, but in the end you get a lower income tax rate, that's a benefit to you. I think by lowering income tax rates, it stimulates the economy. We have more companies who want to be here because they pay a lower income tax rate, or individuals pay a lower income tax rate, which means more money for you. And with regards to some of the services you mentioned, as an Uber or something like that, those are services that would be taxed if you use it. But in implementing the tax on that service, it only affects the end user of those who do it. And that's the biggest thing that I've heard about some services. People are frustrated, upset. That they're maybe paying a more of a tax on a service. That tax is passed on to the end user. We talk about transportation, for example. There's been ideas that we've heard through the first two committees that citizens have brought up, and we've thought about it as well, about a mileage tax. When you register your car, how many miles do you put on the road? Well, to that person who doesn't drive a car, maybe they take public transit, or maybe they carpool more, or maybe they use a bike or whatever they may do, that may happen, they would pay a less tax because it's a user tax. And so on those services, that if there's a tax and not everyone uses it, not everyone's going to pay it. But for those who do, that may be a tax that would be implemented, and it would be at a lower rate across the board. So across the board, people pay a lower rate of taxes. But we may be paying taxes on something that we've never had before, and so that may be perceived as a tax increase. Where I'm paying a tax on something I wasn't paying before, I'm getting a reduction on something that I have been paying taxes on. And so in the end, we hope that the two would balance out to be a net effect of zero increase.
Right. So some people could.
I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it definitely does. Some people could be paying less. Some people could be paying more, depending on the services they use there.
They could be paying more on a service that they've never paid before. But we've lowered the tax rate on other things that they've been paying at a higher rate, and so hopefully the cost savings of what they've been paying, as opposed to something new that they're paying on now, would balance out and be zero effect. That is in effect what we're. Is a task force. This is not a task force looking to raise more revenue for the state.
And so for those who have businesses, here's an example. My parents own a business, and it's they offer a service. They do personal training, fitness training, and it's a service.
Sure.
They train people. How do they then, for those people who are small businesses, I mean, it's my mom and my dad and my brother that run the business, how do they then add that on to the consumer? That's going to be a lot of work for small businesses to add that on, and then it's going to hit those businesses. I can't see it not in any way hitting some businesses very hard that have been offering these services for years without taxes.
No, you're correct. And so, you know, one of the things we've heard in our first two town meetings is that, hey, I have a small business, but now all of a sudden I've got to be the tax collector, and I have to remit or submit the taxes that I collect from the 100 clients a year I have, or the 500 clients I have a year. I now, or let's just use your example with your family who is in personal fitness. You know, if they have a gym, and let's just say they train 40 people a month.
Right.
Or whatever that number may be. Now I've got to collect 2 or 3% of taxes, and now I have to remit it, and the complications of all of that. We've heard that. It part of a good smart tax policy, it has to be simple.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be easily collected and remitted. And so those are some of the guiding principles we as a task force have to make sure that we live by, is that this can be defined as more simple and not complicated and more onerous to business.
Right.
House Bill 441, as it was going through last year, was heavily on services. And there is a and rightfully so, I can see where people would feel this way. They think that that is where we're starting, is where that bill left off. And I will just tell you, as a co-chair of the committee, and I'm sure Senator Hilliard, if he did not already say it, would agree with me, we're not starting at that point. We're actually starting from scratch and saying, what can we look at that realistically makes sense, that can be simple, but still allow us the flexibility within our state budget to allocate dollars where they need to be allocated. And it may not be taxing your parents for the service that they provide in fitness training and having them collect and remit. That may not be part of the answer in the end. And so would it be examined? It would be examined. But what is the complication rate and what is the complexity? And does the complexity outweigh the benefit of collecting that tax? And if that's the case, then we probably should not be doing it.
Right. And so yeah, appreciate you going into that, explaining it a little bit more, and well put there, and starting from scratch, a better place to start than some of the conversations that happened this last legislative session. It was contentious. We could easily say that.
But I will say this. I'd publicly give Representative Tim Quinn kudos for running that bill and bringing this issue to the forefront of people's minds. We were asked last night, why are you guys doing this now? Why do we have to do this? And who's telling you to do this? We have legislative analysts. We have state economists. The state of Utah, from its early heritage, pioneer heritage, have always looked forward, and they've always been fortunate enough to have the foresight to see things as they were coming and to fortify themselves and to build walls to prevent whatever that may be from coming. And I don't know if Senator Hilliard shared this with you or not, but there was real pushback for state leaders for creating a rainy day fund, a savings account. They said, hey, it's raining now. Why are we putting this money back in savings? We need to be spending on education. We need to be spending on these other areas. But those legislators that predate me, and Senator Hilliard is one of them, he's been here forever, it seems like, but they were able to put back funds in a rainy day fund. When I came into office in 2009, if you remember 2008, 2009 was the first legislative session, we were $750 million upside down in our state budget. $750 million. We had nearly $700 million put back in rainy day funds. And so we were able to be one of the first states to successfully climb out of that recession that happened in 2008, because people predating me had the foresight to do this. Right now, our economy is great in the state of Utah, and we're doing great things. What we need to do now is look what's going to happen in the next 20 years. The way we spend money and the way things are purchased now are vastly different than the way we did it before. I would bet there are many people in rural Utah who buy less on Main Street, who are finding themselves having to go less to the Wasatch Front, to a Costco or to a Sam's Club or whatever, because the ability to shop online and to have things shipped directly to their home. It's the same thing on the Wasatch Front. Spending habits have changed. Our economy has changed. Why are we doing this now? We're trying to look forward and be forward thinking. So when a crisis happens, we're prepared for that.
All right. Appreciate you. We've got something weird going on with audio. I don't know if you went just on may have hit a button on your phone or something there. But we are unfortunately out of time. But appreciate your comments, and it's been good. And we hope, I know you'll be at the event tonight. We hope many of our listeners will, of course, attend and take the opportunity to talk with you more on this.
We honestly want to hear from everyone. Please come, and I look forward to being in Richfield tonight.
It'll be good to have you, and we'll see you there. We'll be broadcasting live as well, so it'll be a good event. Again, at 6 o'clock for the meeting, and then you can speak with the members of the task force at 5, starting at 5 at the town hall meeting at the Sevier County Fairgrounds. Thank you so much, Representative Francis Gibson, for joining
us. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.